welcome to God and Country Radio, where I discuss current social, economic, political, and prophetic events in the light of biblical exposition. I'm your host, Pastor Brad Winship, pastor of Harbor Bible Church in Lawrence Harbor, New Jersey. For this week's program, let's talk about all that we're hearing on the news every night, the Trump indictments. Now, before we get into this, I just want to say that in this, evil is being exposed. Righteousness is being vindicated, and evil men are being judged. Everything is going according to the plan. That is God's plan. Isaiah chapter 14, verse 24, "The Lord of hosts has sworn, saying, surely just as I have intended, so it has happened, and just as I have planned, so it will stand. For the Lord of hosts has planned, and who can frustrate it? And as for his outstretched hand, who can turn it back?" And that wasn't just a reference to all good things, but the rise and the fall of the Assyrian and the Babylonian empires. The Trump indictments are doing exactly what God wants done in this world, the exposure of sin and the eventual vindication of the righteous. Now, let's not assume that everyone is on the same page as to what these Trump indictments mean. Let's break it down into three opinions. First, those who would say the Trump indictments are good, morally good, because the evil President Trump is finally getting his comeuppance. Justice is being done in the world, and that would be the opinion of the Democrat left. Now, a second opinion would be that Trump was a good president, but he's reaping the consequences of his own dysfunctional behavior. The first indictment: paying hush money because he allegedly committed adultery with a porn star. Indictment number two: taking and hiding classified documents. Indictment number three: fomenting the January 6th protest by claiming that the election was stolen, a protest that the left is calling an insurrection. Indictment number four: calling officials in Georgia, asking them to find him more votes. So if this is the case, the lesson would be that if you are to be a righteous civil leader, you have to be squeaky clean. No skeletons in your closet where your enemy can get a handle on you. Such as in the case of King David, where his enemies got a huge foothold on him when he committed adultery with Bathsheba. So in this second assessment, Trump is still getting what he deserves. He made his bed, so now he has to sleep in it. And that opinion would likely be that of Mike Pence and other never-Trumpers on the Republican side. They would say, "I told you so, this is what you get for having a playboy president." The third assessment would be that Trump is an innocent victim in all this. These are trumped-up charges, excuse the pun, to either get rid of Trump or just for a vindictive payback. What Trump is being accused of is what the Democrats do all the time. These Democrat prosecutors and the media are blatant partisan hypocrites. They're really not morally outraged by Trump's actions. It's all just a pretext to take him down. They've been looking for something to indict Trump on, and they've twisted the meaning of the law to do it. And so many psalms would apply to Trump in this situation, such as Psalm 25:19. "Look upon my enemies, for they are many, and they have hated me with violent hatred." Psalm 35:7. "For without cause they hid their net for me, without cause they dug a pit for my soul." Psalm 35:19. "Do not let those who are wrongfully my enemies rejoice over me. Do not let those who hate me without cause wink maliciously. They open their mouth wide against me. They say, aha, our eyes have seen it." So Psalm 35 is what we would call in our day a gotcha moment, where the enemy constantly examines your every word and action, looking for a pretext to discredit you. Did you ever experience that? If not, you will someday. Psalm 59: Deliver me from my enemies, O my God. Set me securely on high, away from those who rise up against me. Deliver me from those who do iniquity, and save me from men of bloodshed. For behold, they have set an ambush for my life. Fierce men launch an attack against me, not for my transgression, nor for my sin, O Lord. Now, this brings up a fascinating aspect of King David's life, his testimony, the Psalms, an aspect that most people are not aware of, but one that I guarantee you will run into personally. David's enemies indicted David because he committed adultery with Bathsheba. But David and God knew that the accusations of the opponents weren't because of adultery. Their agenda was simply to take down David so they could secure power for themselves. For example, Psalm 69, verse 4, those who hate me without cause are more than the hairs of my head. Those who would destroy me are powerful, being wrongfully my enemies. What I did not steal, I then had to restore. Then notice the next verse. O God, it is you who know my folly, and my wrongs are not hidden from you. So David was acknowledging his faults. But he realized this was not the true reason for his enemies' persecutions. What they actually hated was David's righteous positions. Psalm 35:7, for without cause they have hid their net for me, without cause they dug a pit for my soul. Now back to Psalm 69. Psalm 69 is a messianic psalm. It starts off talking about David's persecutors, but then ends up talking about Christ's persecutors. In the New Testament, Psalm 69:9 is quoted in reference to Christ. For zeal for your house has consumed me, and the reproaches of those who reproach you have fallen upon me. So how can there be a comparison between David's persecutors and Christ's persecutors? Because David was a sinner, and it seemed like he was just reaping some of what he sowed. Well, God's people may sin, but our persecutors are rarely persecuting us for that. They're just annoyed by our moral worldview, and they want to steal any wealth or power we might have. Now, for Christ, in that they persecuted a completely righteous man, it showed that the persecutions of unbelievers isn't really about their desire for moral uprightness, but a desire to put down the righteous. In Psalm 38, David prays a prayer of repentance because of his own sin, sin with Bathsheba. But then he says about his enemies in verse 20, they oppose me because I follow what is good. So it really had nothing to do with David's moral failure. And David was able to separate between the two issues, understanding that his sin really had nothing to do with his enemies' persecutions. Therefore, his enemies were guilty before God of unjust persecution against the righteous, even though David had sinned. See, David didn't fall into the common trap where the righteous man ends up having false guilt, saying there's nothing I can do or say against my opponents because I've done something wrong. I didn't return that library book on time. I have a misdemeanor on my record for overdue parking tickets. Now, of course, this is where it gets very deep, because we all know that one of the excuses a sinner will make is victimization. That I'm being persecuted unfairly, like Cain said in Genesis chapter 4, as soon as a politician gets caught in a bribe, he will claim that this is just a political hit job because I'm of a certain party. So we need to watch out for that. That when we're indicted by other people for our sins, we don't immediately claim that we're being persecuted for righteousness' sake, or persecuted unfairly, or with prejudice or bias. But there are cases in which even when we do wrong, our enemies persecute us unrighteously. We sin, but they take it further. They make it a pretext to advance their own power. Now, this happens at work. This happens in their neighborhood, with family, This happens in marriage. You didn't take out the trash. So as far as your spouse is concerned, you're a psychopathic manipulator. Because your spouse has another agenda, which has nothing to do with the trash. And you can't do anything right, and everything you do wrong is exaggerated because your opponent has an agenda. So the King David case is a warning to those who are quick to judge the failures of others. If you condemn the righteous for their failures, you may be putting yourself under the judgment of God. So there you have it. Three possible views for the Trump indictment. One, Trump is an evil man who is finally getting justice. Number two, Trump is a good man who is just being taken down for his own faults. And number three, Trump is a man being persecuted for righteousness' sake. What's the right view? Well, there is a right view based upon wise, godly discernment. Let me just suggest it's somewhere between the second and the third view. Yes, Trump has his faults. Ecclesiastes chapter 7, verse 20. Indeed, there's not a righteous man on earth who continually does good and who never sins. But what we're seeing in the Trump indictments is a political witch hunt. And most of the public realizes this, which may mean this might backfire on the Democrats. And that's what I want to spend the rest of our time discussing. The first part of this discussion was all about the issue of motives. What's a legitimate accusation versus what's a false accusation? And the second part of this discussion is about how these indictments will hurt the Democrats. Because biblically, every time you dig a pit for someone else, you will fall into that pit yourself. Guaranteed, this is a 100% unbreakable principle. Proverbs 26, 27, he who digs a pit will fall into it, and he who rolls a stone, it will come back on him. Proverbs 28, 10, he who leads the upright astray in an evil way will himself fall into his own pit, but the blameless will inherit good. So in this sense, I want us to understand how these indictments against President Trump will actually be turned around for the good of the righteous. Last time I looked, Romans chapter 8, verse 28 is still in the Bible. We know that God causes all things to work together for good to those who love God and to those who are called according to his purpose. And this is not referring only to those things that are positive. It also includes the machinations of the wicked. When the devil shoots at us, he always shoots himself in the foot. Now, we're all amazed by the left's denial of election fraud. But stop and think for a moment how the shoe could be on the other foot if and when a Democrat loses. Where the left will claim election fraud in order to delegitimize the conservative candidate who won, to sow doubt concerning the winner's authority in the eyes of the public, so there would be a black cloud hanging over his entire administration. Accusations of election fraud would give the media something to keep before the public to discredit the presidency. You know, just like they kept the Russian collusion going for most of Trump's administration. And when they failed at that, they tried to use Trump's phone call to President Zelensky. You know, they were always looking for something to discredit him because they wanted the power of the White House back. They wanted their abortion, their government largesse, their socialism. If the left used the election fraud tactic, they could run constant reports of possible election fraud and get the support of YouTube and Google and Facebook and Twitter. Accusations of election fraud would not be considered a threat to our democracy. It would be considered a civic duty, legitimate reporting, legitimate political speech. And when Trump did win back in 2016, there are plenty of people on the left claiming that he wasn't their president, that he's illegitimate and the people need to practice civil disobedience at every turn. So if a conservative president ever wins again in the future, there's a real possibility that the Democrat playbook would be to claim election fraud. But now, because of all of the left's defense of election integrity and their indictments against anyone who alleges election fraud, that tactic has been taken off of their table. They cannot play that game. They will never be able to claim election fraud if they lose. Well, not very easily. And they can never use any protests or charges against government buildings in any civil disobedience. No riots, no sit-ins. Because they'll be doing the very thing that they said was anti-democratic, illegitimate political speech, evil insurrection done by President Trump. But historically, that kind of civil disobedience has been the playbook of the left when they can't get their way. This is a Saul Alinsky rules for radicals approach. You know, they know that the squeaky wheel gets the oil. The one thing politicians hate is public disruption. And politicians will go along with just about anything to prevent an uprising. But again, that's all off the table for the left in the future because of what they've done to Donald Trump. And this too is the providence of God to expose the left if they ever resort to those tactics in the future. You know, if Republicans ever wanted to cheat, they could certainly get away with it now in the current environment. Now, I know what you're thinking. It doesn't matter. The left doesn't care about being hypocritical. Without any reservations, they will do exactly what they've indicted the Republicans for having done. You know, the left will practice a bold-faced double standard. They'll flip-flop on this whole issue, claiming that there are new circumstances that are different from the 2020 elections. You know, I get that. But still, it will not be easy for the Democrats to do. They can't do this without exposing their hypocrisy. They will be called out relentlessly for their double standard. And that exposing does sway many independent voters and wakes up the public. So again, here's the principle. Proverbs 26:27, he who digs a pit will fall into it. And he who rolls a stone, it will come back upon him. It's the old saying, those who live in glass houses ought not to throw stones. Or you can't have it both ways, condemning the sins of others that you want to do yourself. So here are just three biblical examples of how this works in practice. First is probably what immediately comes to mind, the book of Esther. Haman hung on the gallows that he made for Mordecai. Haman, an Agagite who was an anti-Semite, had the king of Persia pass a law to destroy a group of people who were subverting the Persian government by disagreeing with the law. He had in mind the Jews. But little did Haman realize that the very concept he was promoting, this loyalty to government, would be used against him when it was discovered that he was subverting the Persian Empire for his own gain. And in the end, Haman's attempt to destroy the Jews actually strengthened the government protection of the Jews. A second example is Daniel chapter 6. Daniel was a righteous politician in Babylon under the new Persian Empire, but the other bureaucratic officials had it out for Daniel. Why? Well, we're really not given a reason. Simply states that they tried, but couldn't find any grounds for accusation against Daniel in regard to government affairs, but they were trying. In the context, it was likely jealousy. They wanted the position and the power that was given to Daniel. You know, just like the Pharisees crucified Jesus out of jealousy. Now, there was also probably a moral element where these officials didn't like the righteous standards and the financial accountability Daniel was imposing. Jealousy and lawlessness are usually paired. So these commissioners got King Darius to sign a law prohibiting religious freedom under the guise of promoting loyalty to the state. Now, they didn't tell the king the real intended consequences of the legislation, which was to persecute their opponents. So what happened? Daniel's arrested. He's thrown into the lion's den. When the punishment doesn't destroy Daniel, the king then throws Daniel's opponents into the lion's den because they were the ones who were discovered to actually be disloyal to the state. Does this happen today? All the time. In many different circumstances and in many different ways, if you dig a pit for others, God will make sure you fall into it. Third example is the prophet Jeremiah. The false prophets and the elders of Israel, who are unfaithful to God, accused Jeremiah of going over to the side of the Babylonians, and they had him arrested for treason. This is all recorded in Jeremiah 37. But by doing this, it put the elders of Israel into a situation where they would have egg on their face if they ever decided it would be good policy to surrender to the Babylonians, at least to save the city. Their accusation against Jeremiah set them up for destruction because they stubbornly had to save face in the light of what they accused Jeremiah of. Their accusation against Jeremiah made them more adamant not to submit to Babylon. Could it be that the left's Russian collusion hoax, that Putin is a boogeyman and that Russia influenced our elections against Hillary, could it be that that contributed to the current adamant support for Zelensky over Russia? I think so. To what degree, we may never know, but God is working out his judgments. So in Jeremiah 39, when the Babylonian army started to break through the walls of Jerusalem, the elders of Israel tried to sneak out of the city. They were caught and slaughtered. The very thing they falsely accused Jeremiah of doing, being disloyal, not standing up against the enemy and sneaking out of the city, they did. The very pit or accusations they made against Jeremiah became the basis for their own condemnation. Remember Harry Reid, Senate Majority Leader under President Obama? In 2013, with the Democrats in power, he changed the Senate rules so that the filibuster could no longer be used against presidential appointments, such as appointments to the Supreme Court. Little did Harry Reid realize that with that change, in just 4 years, with the Senate Republicans having a slight majority under Trump, Trump would be able to confirm all of his justices to the Supreme Court. Harry Reid, in thinking he was sticking it to the Republicans and doing away with the filibuster, made possible the overturning of Roe last year. And you know, this is how the world works. Because there is a God who is on the throne who will always thwart the plotting of the wicked, using it to expose the sin of sinners and using it for the good of the righteous. 1 Corinthians 3:19, he is the one who captures or thwarts the wise in their craftiness, which is a quote from Job 5:13. He captures the wise by their own shrewdness, and the advice of the cunning is quickly thwarted. So Isaiah chapter 8, verse 9, devise a plan, and it'll be thwarted. State a proposal, and it will not stand, for God is with us. So in the case of these Trump indictments, it may seem bad, but someday soon, the whole thing will come back on the heads of the Democrats and work for the good of the church. The key is to really believe Romans chapter 8, verse 28, that all things will work together for good. Now, this doesn't mean we shouldn't continue to point out the legal and the constitutional errors in the whole thing. We need to encourage people to do right, not to do wrong so that good would come from it. Well, there's a whole lot more to say about this subject. The extended video version of this program is at my YouTube and Rumble channel, God and Country Biblical Exposition. The radio website to listen to this program again or other past programs or to get all the video links is at my website, godandcountryradio.org. Thanks for listening. Keep standing for the truth. And may Jesus Christ reign.